Wondering if you should stay in Illinois or move out of state? Get your copy of Scott Tucker's book, Escape Illinois, Should I Stay or Should I Go? Get your complimentary copy at retirementdakota.com.
Investment advisory services are made available through AE Wealth Management, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
Welcome back to Sound Sessions here on WGN Radio. This is Michael.
And hey, I'm Kevin.
And, you know, if you wanted to find us, find some more information about us, you can go to Sound Sessions WGN. That's our Instagram page. It's kind of blowing up. Our Sound Sesh Pod is our Twitter. Or you can send us a good old-fashioned email at soundsessionspod@gmail.com. And, Kevin, I got to say, I'm kind of excited for this next interview. We've been talking about this guy for a while. He's kind of a common thread. And by him, I mean the band that he's in, Third Eye Blind.
Yeah, so we caught up with Chris Reed of Third Eye Blind at Lollapalooza a couple weeks back. And, you know, they were in the news recently. They have new music coming out. And they played a benefit concert, not at the RNC, but in Cleveland during the RNC. So we got to his take on that. And they kind of were trending. As what happened from that concert. So, yeah, really, really great interview.
One of the best bands from the 90s. I mean, everybody knows from Semi-Charmed Kind of Life. There's Jumper. And Kevin, is it true that this was your first concert?
This was my first concert. Not with Chris, because Chris joined in 2010. But, yeah, they were my first concert. I was in seventh grade. And I want to say it was at the Riviera. It was like Train opened or something like that. But I went with my parents. Had a great time, and I've loved them ever since. So
It was an absolute pleasure being able to talk to Chris and we loved every single second of them. You can catch them next time they're going to be here in Chicago. Great band.
Yeah, and without further ado, let's listen to Chris Reed of Third Eye Blind.
Hi, this is Chris from Third Eye Blind, and you are listening to Sound Sessions.
All right, welcome back to another episode of Sound Sessions live from Lollapalooza. This is Kevin.
And what's up? This is Mike.
And Mike, you know how excited I am for this. We're here with Chris Reed of Third Eye Blind, one of my favorites of all time. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hello, very nice to be here.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming. Thank you for your time. Well, I guess first want to get into it. So you've been a member since, what, 2010 now? Is that correct?
2010, yeah, that's right, yeah.
So how did that come about? Like, I know you're from Dublin.
Yeah.
The guys are from San Fran, if I'm not mistaken. How does that happen?
Yeah, well, so I used to play in Los Angeles in a band with our drummer Brad, and we just always got on well and always liked to play together, and Brad really liked the way I played the guitar. And then when Third Eye had need for a new guitar player, he kind of gave me first dibs. He called me up one night in Dublin, and I was like, "What's up, Brad?" And he was like, "Ah, can you learn 90 minutes of music for Saturday?" And I was like, "Yeah." So, and I'd never heard of Third Eye Blind before.
No kidding.
Yeah, Third Eye are not... Well, I don't know if they're big in Ireland, but they weren't on my radar in Dublin. I didn't know anything about it. I'd never heard the name, I thought. And I knew Brad for years, and I knew he played in a big band, but I didn't know what they were called. I thought they were called, like, Three Blind Mice or something. So that's basically it. We started in 2010, and...
So that first show, you had to learn 90 minutes, and that went okay? Everything went smoothly?
Yeah, we did. It was in Hawaii. It was like a private show in Hawaii, so they thought it was the perfect, opportunity to bring me out. We could do, like, kind of little quiet rehearsals, not have a lot of internet attention, and just kind of do a little show, and that's what we did. So, Brad just sent me, like, a list of songs to learn. I just learned them off. And then I found out the band was really big, like, ages later. Like, when I met Steven...
Like 20 years strong.
Yeah, when I met Stephen in Hawaii, Brad was like, Stephen walked over and he went, "Hi," like, and shook my hand, and I went, "Hi," and I said, "I'm Chris," and he went, "Stephen," but he thought that I would know who he was. You know what I mean? Not in a rude way, but he just, it was just this funny,
sure.
I had no idea who he was, but there you go.
So funny. So I kind of want to get into you guys have been kind of trending lately with the whole RNC debacle. You guys were there playing a benefit show, I guess, but not necessarily at the RNC.
Right. And then you're the first journalist to get that bit of information right. Okay. Usually we have to correct them, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, we were not playing the RNC. We were playing a charity show in Cleveland on the same night.
Was it, like, wrong place, wrong time, or you guys, maybe they pulled the wool over your eyes a little bit, or how did that kind of come out?
No, it was the charity that we were doing it for, Musicians on Call. They just saw a very good opportunity. They said, look, if we put that charity on here, it'll sell out. It'll be massive, you know? And it'll get attention. So they were just being smart with the placement of where they were actually doing their charity show. And then we I mean, they asked us to do it, and that's a cause that we had worked with before and stuff. So we were absolutely happy to do it. And I mean, it was a little bit of like, you know, we went out during the day. We were on tour, so we came in on our tour buses, and we went out during the day, me and the rest of the guys. We went walking down the main street, and it was just nuts. I mean, like, I'm Irish, but like the maddest people in America, like the maddest people in America were there collectively that day.
Right.
Like the maddest people, like guys walking down the street with like repent your sins, all that, and like no on their t-shirt, and they're shouting into a loudspeaker. I mean, it was like the beer halls of Munich back when Hitler was agitating the German people. Do you know what I mean?
Seriously.
I was going, this is proper mental, like proper mad people here. Yeah. And it was crazy. There were screaming matches on the street. It was mad. So we kind of knew at that point. We were like, this is going to be a lot of Republicans at this, you know, which is fine. We have lots of Republican fans. But, you know, once you get into the political sphere, and Stephen is very... verbose on that, you know. I don't really have a dog in the race because I'm Irish, so I don't.
Can you vote? Are you registered here? Are you a legal citizen?
I can vote in. I'm an Irish citizen,
so
I can vote in. I know over there. Yeah. Well, we have more than two parties, you know. But in America, yeah, in America, I'm not a citizen of America. Not yet. So yeah, I don't. So
are you debating whether or not to become one, depending on the results?
No, I am. Yeah, I will be, of course. I mean, dual citizenship. That's what I'll have. But that's how the whole thing trended and all of that stuff. It just went nuts because Stephen just got out. Yeah, look, I made a video about it and I put it out on the internet and I called it Let Stephen Be Stephen. And it's kind of a thing that we're starting to say now to each other a lot. It's like, Let Stephen Be Stephen, you know, because he is kind of like a singular voice when it comes to this stuff, because he's smart. He's very well educated on the topics, and he has a very, very strong personality. You know, and he's not afraid to say you to absolutely anybody, and he'll debate it, he'll talk about it. You know, so if you give him the platform, you know, you give him a big stage and a microphone, you gotta let Stephen be Stephen, and that's what that was all about. You know.
So that day when the comments were made and everything at the actual show, how was it received?
It was really fun for us because there was a mix. There were people there who were super fans for years,
right,
who come to a lot of our shows, and they were there, and they were mixed in with like these guys in suits, and they just looked like old rich white people who were just at the RNC, like, which was literally five blocks away. I mean, when we went out for food during the day, we could see all the snipers and all that, you know, and like the police, and it was proper mad. But the actual experience on stage was kind of funny, because normally Stephen's very vocal. Like, you know, at the beginning of our show, it's kind of dark and mysterious, you know, shadows and all of that. And then it kind of builds up to a point where we kind of open up the show and bring the audience in a bigger way. And so Stephen at that point will usually talk. And, you know, he'll engage with the audience and get them going, you know. And he just stayed off the mic, like, up till much later in the show, you know. And then, of course, he turned around to me in the middle of, like, our two songs in, and he was like, we got to play Non-Dairy Critic. Like, we just completely threw out the set list and just started playing, like, all these songs that where he's kind of voiced very effectively kind of his political positions. And, yeah, it was really fun because it was just, like, super on the fly. So we loved that. We just did a show last night, which was just, like, we played nothing of what we played tonight.
Yeah.
Like, literally, when we were thinking about what we're going to do for the show, Stephen was like, he was like, whatever, if it's on the set list for tomorrow night, we're not playing it tonight.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the set list for last night was incredible. You know?
So what does it feel like, you know, being kind of the newer member of the group and playing these deep cuts like you did last night at the Park West to a sold-out show, and then seeing this connection with the crowd, like knowing all, like people were singing along to every single song. I mean, what's that feel like as a musician to see, you know, that this band has had this effect on so many fans for so long?
Yeah, it's a no-brainer. It feels amazing, you know what I mean? It's especially amazing when we play stuff off Dopamine and you see people in the front row. We played Blade last night, for example, and we don't play that live very often. And you could see the audience. They're hanging on every word. They're singing along the whole thing. And then when it comes to that big, mad guitar solo, you just see the entire audience shift over and look at me.
Oh,
you know what I mean? And it's like, they're like, here it comes. Because we've only played it live three or four times, you know?
Yeah.
And it's the guitar player journalistic types, the guitar musos are always, like, their first question is like, you know, so did you do the solo in Blade? Because it's such a mad solo and super fast. And I'm like, yeah. And you know what? The thing is that we have actually, so that was one take, that guitar solo. Yeah, and nice. It's a mad little funny video thing. We just got the footage of a guy that, a very good friend of ours, was at the studio with us, and he filmed various different things in Los Angeles. That was at East West Studios in LA with Jason Later, and he filmed a bunch of stuff on the day, and I'm collecting it off in 3 days when I get back to San Francisco. He's given it to me, and he has the take, nice. As it's called. So
very cool.
Yeah, so we're gonna do a video of it, because I said to Stephen, like, he kept saying to me, think of Smashing Glass. I want it to sound like Smashing Glass, because it's this really broody song, you know, but it's kind of dark and pretty at the same time, and then it's got, like, the lyrics are very heavy. And then he just wanted this, like, insane broken, like, make it sound like broken glass, like smashing glass, he said to me. And so we were in the studio today, and I had, like, an idea for the solo, and I was kind of starting with the madness, you know, the bleep, 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 bleep. I don't know if you know the Muse Madness song. So I was kind of thinking, like, oh, okay, I'll start there, and we'll take it from there. And so I was like, I got this, and he was like, okay. And then I carry, like, a little dictaphone around with me, and I record my voice and stuff into it, you know. And I was like, all right, just sing it to me. So Brad was recording the drum line in the studio behind the glass, you know, and I'm in the control room with Steven, and we're watching Brad do the take, and I'm going, sing it. And I press record the thing, and he's like, okay, recording? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, bleep, 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 bleep. And he sings to me what he thinks the solo should be like, and it's mad. And then I go down to the green room for 10 minutes and kind of just noodle around it. And then I went, all right, and I went back up, and he was like, you want to do the solo? I was like, let's do the solo. So I went in, and I just sat down, because I've got to use, like, a volume pedal and a whammy pedal at the same time. And I sat down, and Jude, the guy with the camera, was just sat in front of me. And we just did it, and Stephen came bursting in, and he was like, that's it! You know? It's like that, like the amanuensis kind of for the composer, you know? It's like, yeah, when the composer and the amanuensis work together, and the composer goes, that's it! You know what I mean? And so Brad was like, yeah! So Brad kind of has this thing, because we're calling it our guitar solo, you know? Because the rest of the guitar solos are like my guitar solos, you know? So this guitar solo, we're calling it, like, me and Stephen call it, it's our guitar solo. It's like we gave birth to it, because it's like we both get the same credit for the maddest guitar solo on the record, because he sang it and I played it. Do you know what I mean? So
that's a good point.
Yeah.
You know, the
longest answer to the shortest question ever. Sorry.
I love it. No, it's good stuff.
So let's speak a little bit to, like, the fact that you guys are so connected. I mean, a lot of the times you are throwing away the set list and everything like that. What, you guys must have a interconnected, like, bond with each other. What's it like on the road with the band and everything?
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'll see Stephen when he hugs people, he says brotherhood. That's our kind of motto on the road. We have, like, the touring, like, we used to kind of call it the circus, but honestly, after a while, circus didn't feel, it felt somehow like disingenuous. We were kind of like, you know, we're more like pirates, really. And it was Stephen again. He was like, you know, we roll into town, take over. That's our stage, when, like, all our crew have the same motto and everything, and the same kind of perception of how the day should go. So when they come in, and it's like, when the stage time goes, now it's Third Eye Blind's crew, our guys are like, that's our stage. I'm like, nobody f***s with the Third Eye Blind crew, you know? So it's kind of like this kind of thing of piracy, like, where we come in and kind of, like, dominate, and then we're out, you know? But yeah, there's a really strong connection, you know? Our crew are like our family. And my guitar tech, Joseph, is like my... I don't even know. It's like he's a big kind of huggy bear kind of guy, and he's a fascinating character to talk to about anything. He's really knowledgeable about a mountain, and he's kind of singularly unique in the way that he approaches so many things, which is great in the guitar tech. He's kind of obsessive compulsive, and every single day he will look at my guitar rack and rig and everything like that, and he'll just sit and kind of like, let's look at it, and then. And I just know he's just thinking, how could we make something 2% better? Like, he's, that's the way his brain works. And yeah, it's amazing.
I'm gonna go out a little bit. I can't just walk all over this.
Yeah, can you put the bass in my headphones, please?
You're listening to Sound Sessions on WGN. I am Kevin.
And what's going on? This is Michael.
So we were, before we went to the news, we had aired the first half of the Chris Reed interview. I think we're going to go ahead and air the rest of it, where he kind of really gets into his obsession with Prince.
Yes, one of the best stories that I've heard. You know, we often talk about our first concerts and everything, and Chris was lucky enough there and kind enough to offer his first concert story.
Well, yeah, let's take a listen. Without further ado, here's the rest of Chris Reed. Third Eye Blind has a funny connection. I mean, obviously, you guys, there's no way you would know this, but we've been doing the podcast for about a year and a half now, and for whatever reason, you guys come up in topic so often for us, whether it be guests we're talking with about whatever, but I guess what it roots from is my first concert I ever went to was a Third Eye Blind show way back in the day. I was like 7th grade, like with my parents, and it was a great show.
What 7th grade is? Americans always tell us that.
What's 7th, like 12 years old? I don't know.
Yeah,
something like that.
12, 13.
There's some equation there. It's like add 5 or subtract 11. Yeah. There's some sort of...
Carry the 2 and then,
there's some equation there that needs to be... that you need to throw in.
Sure.
Or just say the age. You just say how old.
I think like 12 years old or so.
Yeah.
Point being... That was my first show. Blown away. I've been hooked to you guys ever since. What was your first show?
The first show I ever went to was... I went to see Prince.
No kidding.
Yeah.
For your first.
Prince was my first.
Wow.
Yeah.
So it was great. Like, how was the show?
It was... I mean, to give some context here, I from the age of maybe... 9, maybe? Yeah, from the age of 9, I saw Prince on TV. And I was so I grew up in Ireland, and back then it was like MTV was like that didn't exist for us. Do you know what I mean? So we had like one show a week that was on a British channel, where we would get to see what the f*** was going on music wise in the world. I mean, I was like 9. I was playing with Lego. That was it. You know what I mean? And Star Wars. I was totally obsessed with Star Wars. And then I just saw this guy, because he went to number one, didn't he? But that was probably when I would have been 11. Well, that was when, so Purple Rain. But he came into the, 1999, so yeah, 83, yeah. So yeah, I was like just coming up on 10. Sorry, I'm doing all the math in my head here. But
equations.
But, so I was in like third grade. No, I'm kidding. So that's even the wrong equation there. And I tell you, never get an Irishman to talk. We'll just talk forever about
it. I like it though, it's good.
It's crazy. I saw him doing 1999, and I remember my big brother Carol saying to me, like, he was going, "That one's Prince," because like the beginning of the song 1999 is like, you know, "I was dreaming when I wrote this," and that's Wendy sings that, right? So that was like, that's a bird, like that's a girl, or like fair enough. And then the bass player goes, "This guy, you know, I woke up this morning, good this morning, well, judgment day," and I was like, "Is that Prince?" And my brother was going, "No, Prince is the other one." And he comes, like, on the video, he comes down the pole, and he's got the purple trench coat, and he walked with the guitar behind him, and he walks across the stage, and I was like, he is the baddest ass. But I didn't even have that vocabulary yet. I was just going, like, me like, you know, me want to be, you know. It was mental. So he blew the head and shoulders off me, and I had to beg my parents to go and see him, because then, of course, they got me the Purple Rain cassette for Christmas, and I just lionized every inch of the thing. I was like entirely obsessed, and then I just wanted to get all his other records, because he had released a bunch before that, you know. And I was just proper obsessed with Prince. There was nothing else. And they put out the single for Let's Go Crazy, and back then you could buy the 12-inch, and it had the remix, like on the other side it would be the 12-inch remix, it would just go on way longer, and then on the other side they'd have like the B-side, you know. And my dad's a huge music fan, and a big massive record collection, and like very obsessive about a lot of that stuff, and that's probably where I got it from. And so I sat down with the record player one day, and I was like sitting there listening to the B-side of Let's Go Crazy. And anybody who knows a lot about Prince will know that the B-side for Let's Go Crazy is a song called Erotic City. And I was 11, and so I was sat there with the headphones on with the cover, because that's what I would do. I would just sit, listen to the record, and look at the cover. There was nothing else. Like, you didn't play with your phone, you didn't have phones, you know, but there was nothing else. You didn't read a book and listen to music. You listened to music, you know? So I was just sat there, like, looking at this. And my dad walks in, he goes, "Oh," and he's like delighted that I'm so obsessed with music, you know. And he's like, "Oh, what are you listening to?" And I was like, "Oh, it's Prince." And I turned it over and I was like, "It's called Erotic City." And I could see him go, "Yeah, And I remember going, I don't know what that means, but it's bad. I think it's bad. And he left the room, and then I got out the dictionary and encyclopedia, and I pulled out E, and I found erotic, and it said of sexual desire. And I was like, I don't know what that means, but it's bad. That's adult. That's bad, you know? And so, yeah, it was funny. So I had to beg my parents to let me go and see this pervert on stage, you know what I mean? But my mom was like, okay, but I had to go with my two best mates, who were both like 2 years older than me. And I often tell people I was raised by gay men because they're both gay, and they were like, I became best mates with them, and so we kind of grew up together, and they were like my, you know, told me about Santa and sex and everything. Do you know what I mean?
Corrupted you?
Yeah, like all the shit that when my parents were like, so we have something to tell you. I was like, Dara and Barry already told me. Those are their names, Dara and Barry. But yeah, so we all went, and my best mate Colin, and we went down to Cork, which is down in the south of Ireland, and we live in Dublin. We went down to Cork and spent like a night there in some house at some woman, I can't remember, some woman that was a friend of some aunt of somebody. It's all family in Ireland, you know. And I went to see Prince, and it was just the most incredible thing. And I've seen him like, I don't know, 12 or 15 times since, and I saw him at like the greatest ever story. I'll go on forever,
man. No, as much as you want.
But the greatest ever was he did two nights in what was called the Point Depot, which was like this kind of 17,000 people or something. He did two nights there in Dublin, and after the first night there was like this rumor he's going to do an after show, because he always does these after shows, you know. And it was like, he's going to do an after show, and it's like, okay, where's it? So I got my bicycle and I cycled up to where the after show was, and it was like nothing went on. A lot of people were there, but it was like there was nothing. We were all just waiting outside, and I was like, oh, yeah. But I lived 2 minutes down the road, so I cycled home. Next night went to see him again, and afterwards he was like, he's going to do the after show on the bike back up to the same spot. But this time there were like guys out front going, okay, form a line, you know. And I was like, is this going on? We're going, yeah. So it was like £20 to go in, and you'd no ticket or anything like that. So you just walked in, and I'm a photography nut. You can see my camera. I bring cameras with me everywhere. And I had a camera with me. And back then, the cameras were huge, you know, and it was a film camera. My dad's a photographer, and that's probably what that comes from as well. My dad is still a lot to blame for, or to be thankful for, I should say. So the camera, I had a camera with me, and I went in to the venue, paid my £20, and pulled the camera out of my... So wherever I had it, and I took a picture, and the flash went off on the camera, and I went oh shit. Back then, I mean, if there's anybody who was like, no, you can't do that, it's Prince's people. So this, you know, black guy, we had like two black people in Ireland back then. So there were a bunch of black people there, and they were in suits, and they had like little radio things in their ear, and I was like, oh, okay, this is one of Prince's guys. And he comes over to me, and he goes, and he didn't speak, he just goes like motions for the people listening. I'm doing the finger motion, come here thing, gesture. So he's like, come here. And he brought me to the side of the stage, and Prince is on stage with Bono.
Holy shit.
And they're playing The Cross.
Wow.
A song off Sign of the Times. And I'm going like that, and the guy is going, and he's looking at my camera, and he's going, and he's trying to work out how to open the thing. So I go here, and I take it, and I pop, because he wants to expose the film. I pop it, and I open it, and he takes the film out, and he kind of puts the camera on his arm, and he exposes all the film, just rolls it all out like that. I mean, I was like, please don't kill me, you know, don't shoot me, you know. We were like, Americans have guns. So he put all the exposed in his pocket, and he takes the camera, and he closed it, and he hands it back to me. And I thought he was going to go get out, you know, because you've no tickets, it's just like this extra thing, you know.
Yeah.
And instead of that, he goes like this to the people, and this is like, we're right beside the stage, so everyone in the front row is going, yeah, like that. And then they're like, ooh, black dude with the thing, let's get out of his way. And they all step back, and the guy ushers me into the front row.
Wow.
And I was like, so there's me, there's a barrier probably about that, and then about half that distance again is Prince.
Wow.
And I'm just going like,
gosh.
I'm an atheist. I've been an atheist since I was 13. That's why my name is spelled so weird. K-R-Y-Z. It was Christopher.
You can switch it up.
The Bible and went, that's bollocks. And then I went K-R-Y-Z. I paganized my name, just made it up. And now that's on all my legal and everything. I just made it up. But that night, I remember, like, that night going, like, you know, every once in a while, something, you know, it's just happenstance, it's coincidence or whatever it is, but every once in a while, you go, like, oh, my God, maybe somebody somewhere was, like, forcing events to make it, because if anybody in that f***ing whole room deserved to be in the front row seeing that man, it was me, you know?
That's a super cool story, man.
Yeah, and at the end of the show, he jumped down into the audience like that, and there was like this huge push like that, and I just put my hand out like that, and he just shook my hand. And he kind of just smiled, and I was like, oh my God. Yeah, it's horrible that he's dead.
I was just going to say, did that affect you? You felt that?
Yeah, it was miserable. I was numb for like 4 days, and then I was just like, sobbing, you know.
So let's talk about the new EP. Is it out yet, or is it coming out?
It's coming out, and we don't know the release date yet. So okay. The single is kind of, it has been organically just, we just popped it out just to see how that will do like that, and then I guess the push for that starts proper next week. But yeah, it's out. It's already gotten a lot of attention because of the title, you know.
And we are drugs.
I know the single.
Oh, the single, the Cop versus Phone Girl.
Yeah, and that's the first time we've ever played it live today. So.
And people, you catch people singing along or anything, or?
I was too focused on playing the song that I didn't really look at the audience at all for the whole song.
So I want to know kind of what goes into, as an artist, goes into playing like a festival of this magnitude. Is there any like special preparation? And also, are you able to enjoy the festival yourself while you're here?
Yeah, I mean, we got in yesterday. Yesterday was a bit of a bummer because, not a bummer, but we came in. We thought we'd have enough time to come down. I really wanted to see Jane's Addiction and Red Hot Chili Peppers, two of my favorite bands. I mean, I grew up listening to Chili Peppers when John Frusciante was in the Chili Peppers, and then when he left, I was miserable and I hated all the other guys they brought in. Yeah. Even though Dave Navarro was one, Jesus. But I was like, Dave Navarro's not funky. What is he doing in the Red Hot Chili Peppers? And so that one record, the One Hot Minute record, I was like, yeah, that sucks. And then, I mean, I didn't say that. I was like, oh, you know, they had that Airplane song. Right. And I lived in my airplane. That was cute, but it was kind of like, you could tell. I was like, yeah, Flea's kind of writing all this now, isn't he? And it's kind of all a bit basic, you know? Yeah. So, but then I love Josh. I met Josh a few times. He's a lovely bloke.
That's the new guitar player.
Yeah, Josh Klinghoffer, yeah. But when Johnny came back, when Frusciante came back, I was like, oh, you know. And they did their biggest records then with him. And then he f***ed off again. He is mad. He is mad. I've met him as well, and he is mad. He's lovely, but he is crazy. Like, our producer Jason later worked with him on all his solo albums. And so he did some stuff for us on our record, the producer. I was like, so you worked with Frusciante, that's amazing. He's like my favorite living guitar player, really. And I was like, how was that? And he said, if there's alien life form, it's John Frusciante.
Really?
He said at one point, I shouldn't tell the story.
Oh, come on. Yeah. You teased it already.
It's not my story. Yeah, well, I'm sure it's gotten out there already. All right, here it comes, folks. So he said they were in the studio one day, and John was like, I need to speak in tongues. Can you leave the room? And he was like, you what? And he was like, I'm speaking in tongues right now. I need to exercise these demons, so I need to speak in tongue. And he's like, okay. And so he said he walked outside the room and closed the door, and he was like, huh. And then he heard like, blah, 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 all that mad shit. And then for like 10 minutes. And then John opened the door and he was like, okay. He came back in. But he said he's like a monster musician, killer singer, killer guitar player, killer plays piano. He just does everything. Yeah, he's amazing. I love him. His solo records are incredible.
So, when you have some downtime, what are you doing? What are you doing to kill the time? I think I saw on your Insta or something, you're a Pokemon Go guy. You into it?
Yeah.
Me too.
I'm the nerd in the band.
No way, dude.
Sure. I have a drone that I'm going to try to sneak into the air here shortly.
Cool. With you?
It's always, yeah, I bring my drone everywhere with me. Tori-chan, my it's a Phantom 4. And at the festivals, I have a backpack, so I can like literally go, hey, man, hey, security guy, I'm just taking a walk with my backpack. And it's fine. And then I just get him down on the ground and go, because once you get him in the air, no, that's it. No one can hear him. He's like, he'll go 2 miles up, and you know. So you're just a guy with a thing, you know. At that point, you know what I mean. But it's tough flying in the city sometimes.
Sure.
I live in San Francisco, and I fly around the city in San Francisco, and it can be. You can lose connection a lot, and then he flies home himself because he's
really?
Designed
that
to.
Works. That's cool.
Yeah, he ascends up above the skyscrapers and then comes back. Also, this one has obstacles. It sounds like this is in no way an endorsed. Well, I should actually. They gave it to me for free. But it has like obstacle avoidance.
Wow!
So he draws a 3D map as he flies around.
It's incredible.
And so if he comes, like I've tried to fly him into my mates and stuff, and he'll stop up about 4 feet away. Yeah, he's
good. Just a couple more questions for you. I'm gonna keep you all day. Any bands newer or even at the festival or besides the festival, just in general, any artists that you're kind of into these days, you're blown away by, anything like that?
We went to see John Bellion the other night, and it was incredible.
Yeah.
And he's gone on tour with our mates, 21 Pilots, our keyboard player, grew up with them. And it's like the most perfect double bill or whatever they're calling it these days. Ever.
Co-headliner or something like that?
I think he's just supporting them because he hasn't even gone to radio yet, but he had like sold out 1,000 capacity and we just happened to be there and we were like coming down, and he's a lovely guy and we're probably going to do something with him, I think, next year.
What about Guilty Pleasures? Anything like you would be embarrassed to admit that you listen to?
No. I mean,
or unexpected.
I'll tell you. Like one of my absolute favorite bands on the planet is a band called Scandal. I'm not wearing their t-shirt. I was wearing their t-shirt earlier today. Scandal, but it's pronounced Scandaru.
Okay.
They're a Japanese band.
Cool.
I'm into Japanese. So
same.
I go to Japan a lot.
I'm going this for the first time in October.
Yeah. Oh, well, we're going over. I'm going over. What's today? Calm down, Chris. What's today? Is the first or something?
Oh yeah, tomorrow's the first.
Yeah. Right, so I go back to San Francisco. We got four days off, which is like amazing. We have so little time off this year, and then we do a show in Ventura, and then we do Outside Lands in San Francisco, a big festival, and then we've got like 2 weeks off before we start the Asia gigs. So for those 2 weeks, I'm going to Tokyo, and like Steven's going to Costa Rica or somewhere like that, and our bass player is going to Manila because our next show is in Manila. So I'm going to go to Tokyo, and then I'm going to fly to Manila, do the show in Manila, and then we're all going to fly back to Tokyo to play in Chiba at Summer Sonic. So yeah, it's going to be mental, and I like study Japanese, and I'm all into all that. So Scandal are amazing. They're four girls. They grew up in Osaka. They like circumnavigated the Japanese entertainment industry and kind of became a little punk rock girl and awesome. Fan themselves. Now they're kind of, you know, you'd call them J-pop, J-rock.
Yeah, that's
but they're the I saw them play live in Tokyo last year? Just total accident. I was just like, oh, we got a week off, I'm going to Japan. I went over, and then it was like, there was a radio competition, and it was like, Scandal are playing. And I was like, what the fuck? And it was like, literally, like, I have an apartment in Shimokitazawa. And it was littered. So I just got on the bike and went down. And I went in, and I was like, there was a line of people. And then there was a short line. And I was like, what's this line and what's that line? And they were like, this is for people who don't have a ticket, and it's sold out. And those are for the people who have tickets. And I was like, oh, okay. So I went over to that line. And they're all so polite in Japan. The guy was just like, okay, like that. And just that line just went in, and I sat down second row, and I was like, yeah, it was amazing. So, yeah, it was
that
brilliant.
That was another one of those things where it was just kind of meant to be, right?
Yeah, let's not dwell on that. But yeah, that was like, I was like, woohoo, you know?
And just one last question for you.
Generation, I have to say as well, the other band that everybody gives me for listening to is I have to go in a second, but is SNSD, Girls' Generation. They're a Korean eight piece now. One of them left. The one from San Francisco left, but they're all Korean birds, and they're all gorgeous and super cool pop songs. Sorry.
And before we let you go, just because your storyline is so interesting and how you kind of come to be with Third Eye Blind, you got any advice for up-and-comers, whether it be a guitar player or just bands in general?
Jesus. Do you know, there's always that believe in yourself. That's really true. I don't know. It's really difficult because, you know, you'll have people say like, hey, man, what should I do? And then you'll say like, oh, we should always believe. And then, you know, then they play a song and you're like, my God, you're terrible. You know? So I don't know if there's like a way to like have some objectivity for it. You know, it's kind of like look at your, you know, the way you can work out if you're, you know, if you wake up in the morning and the first guy you meet and everybody else you meet that day is cool, right? Then that guy was probably an ass. But if you wake up in the morning and every single person you meet is an ass, then you are the ass. You know what I mean? So there might be a level of that, like where you look at your mates and you go like, you go, well, I know he's an amazing human and he's my best mate, so I gotta be doing something right, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So there must be some sort of equivalency test for that, like a litmus test for that for musicianship, where you can go like, well, I'm playing with him and he's really good, you know?
Yeah.
Like when I joined the band, people were like, they always say, how'd you get into the band? And then when I say, well, Brad, and you're like, people who are like really, really super fans of the band and stuff like that, as soon as you say Brad, as you start that sentence, they go, oh my God, Brad got you in? Because Brad's such a phenomenal drummer. Like, the guy is like, every single person who's ever worked with Brad is like, oh my God, this guy's ridiculous, you know? So it's like if Brad gives you the nod of approval, he's like, if Brad says I want you in my band, then you automatically have like a certificate of authenticity stamped on your head, you know what I mean? So.
Well, Chris, thank you for your time. We really appreciate it. We're looking forward to so much from you guys. Thanks again.
Cool. Thanks very much. Hi, this is Chris from Third Eye Blind, and you are listening to Sound Sessions.